This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great Wednesday morning. We're going to jump right in here because we have an agenda chock full of stuff today, and we want to get right to it. It's National Joe Day, so I guess it's appropriate that we talk to Joe Geruso, New Orleans Councilmember, District A. Joe, have you had that cup of coffee yet?
I'm on number two, Newell.
So you're celebrating National Joe Day in a big way then, right?
Yeah, as always, without a doubt.
Joe, the Louisiana Supreme Court rules in favor of the council that they have standing, that they are an independent body and therefore allowed to litigate issues specifically with the mayor of the city of New Orleans. Tell us where we are on this case and where are we headed.
Well, where we are is exactly what you just said. My law school professor would be in my head saying, remember, the limited holding in this case is the council has the capacity to bring a lawsuit in the Wisner litigation. That is the holding of the case and what is said directly. But Newell, there's a lot of important principles that are in the opinion overall. The Supreme Court notes that the trust for Wisner was established in 1914. It also notes that the Fourth Circuit back in 2014 found that the trust had expired after 100 years, and I think really goes out of its way to say a very common sense principle, which is where there is a bona fide dispute between the mayor and the council, and the council thinks the mayor has acted illegally or done something wrong, then who but the council is there to protect the rights of the citizens? So it's a significant win in the sense that now we don't have to worry about who's going to prosecute the case and make sure we're protecting the huge amount of assets that are in the Wisner Trust, over $100 million. And now what we're going to have to do is a few things. Number one, we've won recently on the issue of whether or not the heirs were entitled to a tax disbursement. The heirs, I assume, are going to litigate and continue to litigate whether or not the injunction that prohibited the distribution of the revenues is valid. But most importantly, Newell, my hope is the heirs will put down their arms, although I doubt they will. But we'll have to go to court really soon and do a couple of things. Number one, we will ask the court, as a matter of law, to say that the trust has expired and that the assets belong to the city. And given that the Fourth Circuit has ruled on this already, it was very clearly litigated, everybody had a right to participate in that, we're going to win on that issue. And then number two, that the ratification agreement that was signed by the mayor in 2020 that extended the trust indefinitely is therefore what's called in the law an absolute nullity. All that means is it has no effect whatsoever. And then, Newell, I think we're also, and I've said this before on your show, but I think we're getting closer and closer to doing this. If we have to continue litigating this and unfortunately expending city funds because the errors make everything so much harder, we're going to amend the lawsuit and we're going to seek disgorgement of all of the proceeds that we're legally entitled to for the last several years or as far back as we possibly can, and try and collect that money on behalf of the citizens of New Orleans and use it for the public good. So it's strange because it is a limited holding that just says the council is an independent legal entity that in this instance has the capacity to sue, but really it opens up the doors for the council to be able to really prosecute this case full bore and make sure the residents of New Orleans get what they're entitled to.
Why would there be a desire to settle with these people at all? And I'm kind of curious, from a legal strategy, why not have an extraordinary hearing under declaratory judgment as to whether or not the mayor was in violation of the city charter? Because my understanding, if based on conversations you and I have had on air, is that the charter says that this type of arrangement has to go to the council for approval, which it did not. So therefore, she may have presumed authority, but she doesn't have actual authority to enter into this agreement. And if you start there with eliminating any possibility that she had the authority to enter in such an agreement, it would seem to me I would move straight to disgorgement. And you want to bring them to the table? Let's go to disgorgement first and go collect the monies after, you know. And, of course, they're going to have a detrimental reliance defense. But based on all of the litigation history there, I think that falls flat on its face.
I think they have a huge problem. And, look, I'm not opposed to doing everything simultaneously. Candidly, I feel like we've given the heirs as much breath and rope as we possibly can, and unfortunately they keep on litigating and making everything harder. To your point, at the oral argument on this last opinion, one of the justices asked, well wait, how can you heirs have relied on the mayor signing of this? There was no resolution that was passed. You all know the council didn't take any action. So the justices are already thinking about this. And I guess if I didn't say it as directly, let me say it now. I really think this opinion lays out a framework for potentially where the court is headed. And it's just that the 2020 agreement, they call it a potential absolute nullity. Obviously, the court realizes this issue will likely be before it soon. And look, I think that's what we are going to discuss. We have executive session on Tuesday as a council to talk to our lawyers, and we're going to look at all of our options to try and bring the litigation to an end as quickly as possible. And as I've said before, I don't want to have to go the disgorgement route because I prefer to get everything wrapped up. But if the heirs say we're going to fight you to the bitter end, then I have no problem getting on the table earlier rather than later. And the specter of millions of dollars hanging over their heads. And then, Newell, the other thing, too, is think about this. If the heirs fight on the disgorgement part, we're going to get discovery into all of that. And did you file your taxes? Has everything been reported to the federal and state government? What did you do the way that you were supposed to? And do the heirs really want to go through all of that and have all of their financial information as part of this record is going to be an open question.
And I don't think that's onerous at all, quite frankly. And I'll tell you why. I always thought that 100 years meant 100 years. And I didn't know that there was an exception to the 100 years. Their expectation is that they would receive this and it would be in place for 100 years, right?
So, that's right.
I don't understand where all of a sudden we want to make 100 years in perpetuity, and what right they think they have the ability to really take public monies in perpetuity. I mean, how do you come into any court in good faith and say, oh, well, we're entitled to this in perpetuity? Really? How does that work?
Well, yeah. Well, the problem is no one wants to give up free money. This is like everybody's life motto. How do I work less and get more? And from that standpoint, I get it. But what you're really saying is a deal is a deal. And the deal was you had 100 years. You benefited on the proceeds of all of this. This expired in 2014. We are now 10 years past this. This is far past time to wind up the assets. And this isn't a deal between two private actors. This is now municipal city funds that can be going to municipal city needs. And part of that is being siphoned off for people who are not entitled to it, who don't live here and aren't benefiting the residents directly. Why are we keep on arguing about this? I don't understand. And yes, I agree that whatever we can do in summary fashion, which just means expedited, how do we make this go quickly, is what we're going to be focused on and making sure that we can bring this problem to heel and get it settled. And by settled, I mean resolved as quickly as possible.
And I guess it's safe to say that one of the possible motivations for the mayor in doing what she did and circumventing what the city charter actually provides for relative to situations like this was in order to gain access to the dollars, not be tied up in litigation, to fund her Forward Together New Orleans not-for-profit, where she hoped that she would be able to direct that and there would not be degrees of separation in the management of saying, which now we've had to slap her hand on that issue. That has gone by the wayside. It's now a defunct organization. And now what she actually did is she sold the taxpayers in the city down the river for the sake of something that was going to benefit her, and we're not the better for it. Fair?
Well, yes, because part of our lawsuit is this all has to be done publicly. Whatever's happening with this money, it is a public money, and the money has to be used. And so part of what we're also claiming is city and Wisner board, you cannot operate in the shadows with this funding. And then, well, the second piece of this is once we win, not if, but when, what do we do with the asset after that? I don't know the answer to that, but I think what we need to do is hire a first-rate firm, do an RFP, and they need to tell the city this is the best way for us to do it. And then how do we use that money for the needs that, whether they range from beautification to nonprofits to infrastructure, all these things that the mayor's office said that they're supposed to go for, we use that for the city and not hidden behind closed doors and not knowing what's happening.
Well, I think if you were to put it out to a vote, people are going to say infrastructure. They're not going to say, let's finance culture bearers. They're not going to say, let's get off on whatever ideological project that the mayor wants to go based on her whim. They're going to say, we want water off our streets. We want clean water in our pipes. And by the way, every now and again, a pothole getting filled would be nice, too. That would be my suspicion.
I think you're right about that, and I also strongly believe in if I have other revenue sources available and I don't have to keep on tapping into the public to pay for those, that's the direction we need to be pointed in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very disappointing. I don't know who these people are. I just don't know how in good conscience you continue doing this, right? And we have some sophisticated organizations that are the beneficiary of these dollars too.
We do. And look, I have had very high level discussions directly with some of those institutions and said to them, we have so many other things that we need to be working on to benefit the city. We really would like to make sure that you are out of the way, because it is important to me that when you have these institutions, they're your partners and that you're not fighting with each other. And look, the bottom line, I'll say it, everybody's been on a gravy train for 100 years. It's over. now we need to move forward, and we need to make sure that the city's needs are being tended to, and that whether you're an institution or whether you're an heir, it's time to realize everything is finalized and your portion is done, and the city gets those proceeds and the assets to better the city.
You know, what's really disappointing is that there's a group of recipients, right, that are receiving this money really contrary to Edward Wisner's desires, right?
He never contemplated
a good number of these people ever receiving any proceeds from his trust. And, you know, I always like to start there. And it's always interesting to me how courts rewrite what the intent of the testator is, I guess, is that the right term? You know, in this regard, I mean, it's like, okay, really?
Well, and look, obviously you and I weren't around for the politics in the 1920s where politicians decided that the Wisner heirs had spent their money too quickly and something needed to be done. That's all in my rearview mirror. The bottom line for us, though, is the deal is what it has been. Everybody has recognized that the trust ended 10 years ago. And candidly, we're not a year or two past the trust ending. We are a decade. And it has been so long that the beneficiaries have been unduly benefiting from an asset that belongs entirely to the city. And that's always been all my argument to the city, is why, when we are entitled to 100 cents on the dollar or 100% of the pie, are we giving up such a large portion to everybody else? It belongs entirely to the residents. Let's take back what belongs to us. And we're always, while I'm rolling, we're always crying about we don't have money, we need the state to give us more money, we need the federal government to give us more money. This is a way for us to help ourselves. And this is a huge piece of the puzzle. And with Port Fouchon being at the heart and the crown jewel of all of this, how we market that to make sure that, along with that asset and others that are part of this now dissolved, expired, extinct trust, how we put all that back into the city's coffers and make it work for everybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, Port Fouchon's a pretty stable investment. I wish I had it.
Yes. Well, it's an incredible asset for the city of New Orleans to own, and we have to make sure that we maximize it to the best of our ability. And like I said, I know that there are going to be arguments about how we get money from what source, what's going to happen, how do we do everything. I guess what I just don't ever understand is when you have an available source of revenue for yourself that you are entitled to, why you don't want to make sure you're not maximizing every penny of it, and particularly when it belongs entirely to the city.
Joe, I wanted to give you an opportunity. I know you wanted to opine on Sewage and Water Board at this point in time. We only have a couple minutes, if you would.
Yeah, well, I think, the governor's report is coming out today. I think the things that we're the most interested in with Sewage and Water Board are the reforms the council has been talking about for a long time. And the biggest one for me, Newell, is what we can do with billing. Senator Harris and Representative Hilferty have offered some bills that would put in place a special master. And all that is a fancy term for an accounting firm or a law firm to come in and just go through the Sewage and Water Board's billing process and get them cleaned up over the next couple of years. I am tired. I know residents are tired of bills that make absolutely zero sense, that are not tied to reality. And for whatever reason, is it because of resources? Is it because of management? Is it because of the personnel, the system? It's irrelevant to me at this point. The billing needs to be solved. And we need to make sure that we have people who are equipped to help solve it. And my guess is there's going to be some recommendations about how to improve process for Sewage and Water Board too, and maybe even for Department of Public Works. Whatever we can do to make things run more smoothly, more efficiently, is incredibly important. to me. And I really want to make sure, more than anything else, that residents have faith that when they get a bill, either that it's right, and if it's not right, that it can be resolved in a matter of maybe 4 to 5 days and not 6 months before they get some sort of relief.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We know you're busy. We appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week.
Same to you. Take care.
All right. That's Joe Geruso, Councilmember District A. We will be right back. On the text line, folks are saying, why don't you disclose who the beneficiaries are? Well, there are dozens upon dozens upon dozens of them. If you just Google the Edward Wisner Trust beneficiaries, I'm sure you'll find the names. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Folks, we've been watching the disaster of the ship, 984 feet, if my memory serves me correct, container vessel that hits the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And you can't help but go to what if. That port is basically out. It's stymied. There's no vessel traffic. There's a bunch of vessels trapped within the port. There are vessels outside the port trying to get in. Where do they go? What do they do? And when you think about the number of Mississippi River crossings that we have by bridge here, and the amount of vessel marine vessel traffic that we have up and down the river, and how important it is to the supply chain, the economy, not only here locally, but throughout the Mississippi River region, it's a legitimate place to go. What if? And here to talk to us about it, Sean Duffy, Executive Director of Big River Coalition. They're committed to ensuring the future of the navigation on the Mississippi River Channel, as well as a number of other channels and tributaries as well. And just to put this in perspective, the annual impact, economic impact of the Mississippi River and its tributaries, $735 billion. It's something to be worried about. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Newell, and I appreciate the introduction. And, before I say anything else, I have to say that, our hearts are with the families of those that were involved in this tragic incident and the loss of life. At this point, it's really going to – I'm going to do my absolute best to answer questions. There's a lot to this process. I'm also reminded that Director of the National Transportation Safety Bureau recently passed away, who was a close friend, Captain Morgan Terrell. I think he passed away within the last month, maybe a little longer. But, right now, a tragic maritime accident that will have history-making come from the NTSB and the report of, what really caused it. But I cannot start without talking about the mourning for those that were lost and considering their family and also the impact of the tragedy on those on the vessel, doing their absolute best to try to prevent a tragedy.
No, absolutely, and that goes without saying, and I'm so glad that you started out that way. Sean, obviously, though, in the aftermath of this, this kind of situation, when especially with the mission and vision of Big River Coalition, these are things that probably keep you up at night, right?
You'd be surprised, but you're right. Yes, a lot of things keep me up at night. We worry about bridges, shoaling, anchorages, vessel groundings, and a lot of times the perspectives that come to us, you know, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and text myself about something I want to research or look at or an avenue to pursue related to maybe a sensor or rereading a NTSB report. There's a great deal of education that goes with the role. I know there's a lot of people in the maritime industry that have to be very cautious about what they say, and oftentimes I'm called on to try to speak when others have to or choose to be cautious. So I want to talk, I want to do my best, but yes, there's a lot to what the maritime commerce on that river, the impact to the nation, the importance of what we do, keeping maritime commerce, citizens safe, people safe, and the supply chain moving.
I wanted to start with this. I was reading an article in the Washington Post, and there was one two-sentence paragraph that really struck me, and it speaks volumes, and I wanted you to respond to it. The vessel is called the Dolly, and it's registered in Singapore, and this the author article says this means it's held to a higher standard than those sad ships that fly so-called flags of convenience. But that didn't keep the ship's power from cutting out in the first minutes following its departure. It seems to me that this is a kind of a sad commentary and an admission that these foreign vessels that come into our ports, you know, are less than. We know they're less than. But yet we're not doing much to try and remedy and remediate this problem. And when you look at the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, one has to ask, we have a lot at risk. And the economic impact to the not only that region, but to the country is huge. Why do we find ourselves in this position?
I mean, this is a really good question, and I'm going to tell you I'll do my best to answer it. It's probably one that a maritime attorney would be better to answer, or maybe somebody from the Coast Guard. But we rely on the regulations that we have in place. So you have not only vessels coming into the U.S., you have U.S. Coast Guard, you have the International Maritime Organization, IMO. You know, the pilots do a great job of screening vessels and trying to make sure they're in compliance. But there are things sometimes changes are made. One of the big pushes now, and I have to be very careful what I say, but there's lower sulfur fuel and looking to reduce carbon emissions. And some of those impacts can limit the horsepower of a vessel, and it's something that I know the pilots on the Mississippi River worked with the Coast Guard in conjunction to try to ensure that vessels coming into the river were capable of making full revolutions because of the currents and the complexity of the river. And, you know, after every tragedy, we will look at an NTSB report when it comes out. And I've reviewed more of them than I care to mention. But the one that comes to mind was the Sunshine Bridge elision just a few years ago. And there were a lot of lessons learned from that. The flag of convenience, you know, we expect that vessels are held to standards that mean they can perform in the river. The pilots, if they have a concern about a vessel, they you know, may be able at times to take it to anchorages. One of the things that keeps me up a lot is the Pilot Town Anchorage is a severely deficient deep draft anchorage, where in 1989 we had a Russian freighter go aground and shut the river down for 21 days. If there's one place in the river for a vessel to go aground and shut it down, it's that very place. And we're working both collectively with pilot groups and other associations and members of Congress to try to get the Pilot Town Anchorage dredge, which the complexity of it is it's outside of the channel, so the Corps of Engineers does not believe they have the authority to dredge it. But it's severely shoaled in, so pilots can't always pull over when there's a problem on a vessel. They may have to try to anchor in the channel, and whenever you do that, you're either shutting down other commerce or you know, putting other vessels at risk. And again, the pilots are counting on the vessels to, when they show up to port, to be in top operating condition. The pilot does an exchange with the captain and ask a variety of questions. And, you know, at the end of the day, it all boils down to, is your ship able to make full revolutions? Are you able to maneuver? How long does this take? How long does that take? But the pilot's depending on that vessel being seaworthy and ready to enter the river.
I've been down the river with a pilot. I can tell you, I know there's a lot of folks that have angst and anxiety about what pilots make and what they do, and, you know, whether or not they're paid too much. And I don't need to opine on that. All I can tell you is that in that journey, for just several hours down to the mouth of the river, we ran into fog, rain. The river was rough. I've never seen anything like it. The rain was so hard you couldn't even see the bow of the ship. But the fact of the matter was is that the levee looked like a speed bump. It looks like those little speed bumps as you go down the street that they have crossing the street. And when you think about it, just as you described, Sean, all of that has to be working in concert with one another to deal with eventualities that come up. And these are crisis situations when you have a vessel going down the river at, you know, 20 knots or whatever, you know, and the ability to stop it, the ability to pull it over, the ability to not crash into the levee system and create all kinds of damage or any other structure. You know, and I go to the Francis Scott Key Bridge thing, and they're talking about barriers around the supportive piers and the lack thereof. You know, as a layperson, I just sit there and I say, why? It seems as though that is a small price to pay for a huge return.
And, you know, that's an excellent point. I mean, many of the things that I look back in the other Sunshine Bridge, the Tampa Sunshine Skyway Bridge, maritime disaster in the 80s where I think over 35 people died. Years later, I would live in Tampa and meet the pilot on board and have a discussion with him. And when they rebuilt that bridge, they really fortified dolphins around it. And I'll say the acronym, and I'd have to look it up, but like American Association of State Highways, ASHTO, did a report talking about how to build stronger dolphins around new bridges and how to retrofit old bridges. But at the end of the day, I'll tell you We've just made some progress that is will help provide additional navigational safety at bridges. There's a program that NOAA has. The acronym there is PORTS, Physical Oceanographic Real-Time Systems, and they have an air gap sensor that gives a reading. Now, air gap didn't have anything to do with this situation, but it's one that the pilots battle here. We have seven bridges that cross over the ship channel, two of them at Crescent City Connection, so we need six air gap sensors. We've only had two for 20 years. They were put in after the Hurricane Katrina with some supplemental funding. So we have them on the Crescent City Connection and the Huey P. Long Bridge. We do not have them on any other bridges. We'll have one added to the Baton Rouge I-10 bridge, another bridge that's heavily trafficked. By the end of April, the Governor Landry's transition team has worked very, very heavily to fund additional air gap sensors, and we may, over the next year or two, have them on all six of the seven bridges. And then there's also
What does that provide, Sean? What does an air gap sensor provide?
So it gives a real-time vertical clearance of the bridge. Available online, so it tells you. And then we're also pursuing current meters on the bridge piers, which will be another metric that will help the pilots. And, we see in maritime operations, and I'm not a pilot, but mm-hmm. We have a lack of sensors, and we're adding them, and it carries over to the computers on vessels and that pilots carry and that people make decisions on. Look at river gauges, air gap heights, what the current is in the river. Adding these new pieces of information will be very helpful. They'll help buy down the risk. But I remember after the Sunshine Bridge, when we approach different entities about $20,000 a year to get an air gap sensor on the bridge, we were unsuccessful. So we've just made a lot of progress.
That's unbelievable.
When you think about the cost of the Sunshine Bridge, and I felt the same way, but I couldn't write a check for it. And I'm talking to the bridge owners and people involved, and they're like, that's a great idea. We just can't afford it.
You can't afford not to do it.
I totally agree with you.
I'm going to have you back on, Sean. We run out of time, but I appreciate you joining us. I mean, I think this highlights a lot of the challenges that we have, dare say deficiencies. It's going to be interesting. Thank you so much. Sean Duffy, Executive Director, Big River Coalition. Have a great week.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, that was illuminating. I don't know about you, but I would like to give the River Pilots all the tools that they say are absolutely necessary for them to hit the mark 100% of the time, or as close to 100% of the time as possible. Whether that's air gap sensor, current sensors, whatever it needs to be. We have a state dredge sitting up there in Baton Rouge. We've heard Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser talk about that over and over and over again. We have a jurisdictional issue, as just pointed out by Sean Duffy, as to whether or not the pilot town Anchorage can be dredged. Well, if the feds don't have the authority, then we have the authority. So why don't we put our dredge to work? I mean, this is absolute craziness. I mean, we have to wait until there's a situation that happens in a port, shutting the port down, where they're trying to redirect vessel traffic all up and down the East Coast. To give you an example, the Port of Baltimore handles more than 750,000 cars and trucks a year, and that doesn't count, that doesn't take into consideration farm and construction machinery, because they have a roll-on, roll-off port there that's incredibly important to them, and now they're having to redirect, and there's not every port is a roll-on, roll-off port, and it affects our economy, it affects the supply chain. And so this is a major disruption. It just would seem to me that we would mind the P's and Q's to ensure public safety, to ensure economic safety. And sometimes I think we're being penny wise and dollar foolish. It's kind of what I heard. I don't know about you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we are going to visit with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., and we will be talking about the Sewage and Water Board Task Force that Governor Jeff Landry put together. Their report is released, and we'll be able to talk about that when we come back with Michael Heck, and we'll talk about the recommendations that they are making and so many other issues. And in the back half of the hour, we'll visit with Christy App, Vice President, Business Development, J.W. Allen Company, and Board Chair for the World Trade Center New Orleans. She'll be on to discuss the LIT, the Louisiana International Terminal, and support for the trade industry. All appropriate conversations in light of all that's going on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.